Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh, has died at nearly 100 years of age. So, if you think it feels as if he'd been around forever, he pretty much had. Victoria Arbiter, who happens, if the name rings a bell, to be the daughter of longtime royal reporter Dickie Arbiter, is herself a royal commentator based in the United States. The prince, she said, had been ailing for a while now, so his death comes as no great surprise.
No, not a surprise, obviously, given he was 99 years old. But I think I, like so many people around the world, had somehow thought Prince Philip was invincible. We look to members of the royal family and they're sort of on this ethereal, otherworldly platform. And I think particularly with Prince Philip and the Queen, so many of us alive today don't know any other monarch or indeed consort. And so given the fact they're always there, you think they always will be. And of course, now we have the very sad news that Prince Philip is no longer with us.
Our view of him perhaps is most influenced by the recent series, The Crown. Do you think that that was an accurate depiction of him? Is that how he would like to be remembered?
No. Absolutely not. I'm so glad you raised this because I think so many people get caught up in The Crown, partly because it is so brilliantly produced. The production values are tremendous. The costumes, the music, the sets, the acting, it is sublime. But it is fiction and it is there is dramatic license. Peter Morgan has talked about the fact that it is his imagining of the royal world set against a historical background. So, no, that is not an accurate portrayal of Prince Philip. And I hope that people won't remember him in that light because there was so much more to him. Prince Philip was a remarkable man, something of a Renaissance man in many ways. He painted. He was an author. He was a pilot. Granted, a lot of people didn't like to fly with him because he was something of a maverick, but he was an extraordinary man, and I think we need to remember the full man versus the media's interpretation of him.
Something of a maverick's an interesting word, and it was one that I was going to put to you. He had a reputation for either speaking out or putting his foot in it. Do you think that he got licensed to do that simply because he had to follow the Queen in all things? He deserved to have his own character.
I think Prince Philip was just unapologetically Prince Philip. He didn't care to put on airs and graces for anybody. He was perhaps the most authentic member of the royal family. He didn't worry about who he perhaps offended, but he was also incredibly respectful of the institution, of what it stood for, of the Commonwealth, of the United Kingdom. He was somebody who was raised to understand deference, but he didn't really like deference. He didn't like people pandering to him. He was a great icebreaker, certainly. He had a sense of humour that perhaps not everybody always understood. And yes, of course, those gaffes have been widely reported. And we look at a number of those comments he made through the lens of today, and we can say, oh, yeah, that wasn't a terribly appropriate thing, or that wasn't terribly PC. But Prince Philip was who he was. But I think we have to look back on his life and acknowledge the sense of duty that he had. He was a working member of the royal family for over 7 decades. He conducted well over 20,000 solo engagements. He was a tremendous support to the Queen. And I think we have to look at the success of the Queen's reign and attribute much of that to Prince Philip.
He had quite a gothic childhood, as we know. Somebody described him as young Philip being left as a piece of aristocratic flotsam on the face of Europe. But he managed to forge out a place for himself. Do you think that he was a sad man?
No, I don't think Prince Philip was. I think he had an incredibly sad childhood. But Prince Philip's philosophy, there was never any sense of self-pity. It was, that's what happened. You just get on with it. You make the best of it that you can. I think he also recognised his tremendous privilege. When he married into the royal family, he was, for all intents and purposes, a penniless foreign-born prince. He didn't really have any standing to speak of. And I think he recognised that privilege. He was proud of the position. He was an honourable naval officer. I think he was determined to use his platform for good. And of course, there were sad moments in his life, as they are in anybody's life. But he chose not to dwell on them. His philosophy was very much, that happened. I acknowledge it. Let's get on with it. Let's keep moving forwards.
He will not have a state funeral, and I'm not sure whether that's to do with COVID or whether he wouldn't ordinarily have had one.
There was never any intention for him to have a state funeral, entitled to one, certainly, but he doesn't like any fuss, never did like any fuss. He always wanted to have a smaller funeral. This one is going to be even smaller because of the pandemic. And this is enormously unfortunate, actually, because I think there's a lot of people across the UK who would, A, want to come out and pay tribute to Prince Philip and everything that he achieved on behalf of the nation. But I think they'd also want to be there to support the Queen and show their support for the Queen. But the British government has said, in light of the restrictions, they're asking everybody to stay home. They've said, please don't even lay any flowers at the royal residences. We'd rather you consider making a donation to charity in Prince Philip's name instead. And this is the thing, we're dealing with the first royal funeral against the backdrop of a pandemic. And so it is going to come with a number of issues that need to be ironed out before the details are released. It would have been small. This is going to be smaller.
I read a commentary this morning that said that he defined a different sort of masculine ideal, one of support rather than leadership. Would you go along with that?
I think that's a really interesting point. Yes, this is going to sound terribly sexist, again, looking at it from the lens of the 21st century. But Prince Philip married the Queen at a time when men led the charge. Men were captains of industry. Men were head of businesses. Men led corporations. And there he was as a hot-blooded, red-blooded naval officer booming with testosterone, and he had to walk two paces behind his wife. He wasn't able to give his name to his children. He recognised that came with the position, but he never once faltered in his support for the Queen. And so perhaps, yes, we could say that is a difference in masculinity. There's a lot of men that wouldn't have stood for that. They would want to be the head of the family in every regard. Prince Philip didn't have that option. But he made the most of it, and he did an excellent job.
One might be tempted to call their marriage a marriage of convenience from the very beginning. You don't see it like that.
No, I really don't. It's been widely reported that the Queen met Prince Philip when she was 13 years old at the Royal Naval College, Dartmouth. She actually met him when she was 8 at the wedding of her uncle, Prince George, Duke of Kent. Prince Philip was at Westminster Abbey as a guest. Princess Elizabeth, as she then was a bridesmaid. Obviously, the meeting at the Royal Naval College, Dartmouth, was sort of the definitive meeting. And the Queen fell in love with him almost in an instant when he went off to fight in the war. She and he exchanged letters over the duration of the war. They were crazy about each other. And he was the only man that she ever looked at, and he was equally devoted to her. So no, I don't believe at all it was a marriage of convenience. I think like any marriage, it had its ups and downs. Who doesn't? But this was a marriage that was unique and special in many ways, and they were married 73 years.
Poor Queen. I mean, she'll feel bereft.
Utterly bereft. Utterly bereft. The royal family has a phrase, you don't wear your private grief on a public sleeve. So I think when we do eventually see the Queen, we'll see a very stoic, very brave monarch, but this is going to hurt deeply. There's so many blessings to be had in living a full, long life, such as they both have. But it also means that you lose a lot of people, dear people, along the way. And they have lost a lot of close friends and family members over the last few years. This one is going to cut tremendously deep. And I just hope that the royal family are able to rally around the Queen and give her the support she'll need.
I was wondering how he dealt with his children's difficulties one way or another.
Prince Philip was always there to offer guidance. He respected their space, and he understood that he could offer pearls of wisdom and offer experience. They're not always going to take it, but he was always there to offer his support. He believed very strongly in loyalty. He believed very strongly in trust, and he believed very strongly in duty. And so I think he will have struggled with the events of the last couple of years of various members of the family with their rifts, Harry and Meghan, of course, moving to Los Angeles. That will have been a decision Prince Philip simply wouldn't have understood. He's also a very different generation. But he, at the end of the day, was a family man, and he was very grateful to have a family because in his own childhood, he didn't really get to experience family. So the family, at the end of the day, would have been what mattered most to him, and he was there to support them.
You're based in America, Victoria, and I don't know what their take on it. They're pretty keen on the royal family in the States, aren't they?
They're very keen on the royal family. They tend to get swept in by the younger generation because, of course, youth and glamour sells in the US. But there is a very strong affection for the Queen. The news came from Buckingham Palace as all of the morning shows were going to air, and almost all of them dedicated the whole two-hour show to Prince Philip and the Queen and his lasting legacy. I think there's going to be tremendous sympathy for the Queen. At the same time, he was 99, so I think certainly in the US, people respect and understand that he had a long and full life. But there's still a sadness, I think, when they look to the Queen and see that now, after 73 years, she's a widow.
The Queen could do with some sympathy at the moment, given the torrent of news coming from Harry and Meghan. I'm wondering whether that's going to change the context in which that is taken now.
I think it depends which country you're in, because certainly in the UK, after Harry and Meghan's interview, there was a huge outpouring of support for the Queen, and Buckingham Palace has apparently been inundated with letters from actually all over the world of people lending their support to the Queen. But of course, when something like this happens, it puts everything into perspective, doesn't it? And people recognise that there is more to life than people's bruised egos or their sense of being hard done by. This is a far larger issue, and Harry was particularly close to Prince Philip. They shared a mutual respect, and I think he's going to be devastated. Harry hasn't seen his family in well over a year because pandemic restrictions mean he hasn't been able to travel. One can only hope they had an opportunity to speak over the phone and find their peace with each other.
Will he not be able to go to the funeral?
I think he will certainly try to go to the funeral. Where they're going to hit a bit of a wall, and this will all need to be navigated and negotiated in coming days, is the fact that given the current travel restrictions, Prince Harry, if he were to fly to the UK, he would be required to have quarantine for 10 days. The royal family leads by example. They're not going to want to appear to have special favours, but I would hope in this instance people are going to cut Harry a bit of slack and give him a free pass. It would be dreadful to think he can't come home and honour his grandfather and be with his family if it means that the British public are going to be up in arms over restrictions. They do have to be mindful of that, but I think Harry will try to go if he's able.
The phrase that one reaches for in these circumstances is the end of an era, and certainly in one way it is. But what do you feel about, while I have you on the line, I should ask you what you feel about the future of the royal family?
I think the future of the royal family is secure. I say that from a point of view where I err on the side of being in favour of a monarchy. I like what it represents. I like having that neutral head of state. Like any business, at the end of the day, the monarchy is a business. It has its ups and downs. And people have said when Harry and Meghan left, that's the end of the monarchy. But I would say that's a young person's attitude. When we look at the history of the monarchy, it's been around for over 1,000 years. It has survived war, reformation, abdication, divorce, scandal, intrigue. And it is still going. And the reason it is still going is because of its ability to adapt and evolve. And it will continue to do so. I think certainly in the immediate future, sympathy for the Queen is going to carry through a pro-monarchy feeling. But when we look ahead to the future, Prince George is potentially the first monarch of the 22nd century. So the future is secure. They will just have to maintain that sense of public interest and public favourability.
That was Victoria Arbiter talking about the late Prince Philip.